Good afternoon, welcome to Know Yourself. This is Dan Udell and I'm here with Laura Barton. Hi Laura, how you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Very well. Laura's come, well, she's on Skype to me, all the way from Ontario, Canada. You're not too far away from the Niagara Falls, I understand.
Yep, that's right. Just about half an hour away, so it's pretty nice.
Yeah. So yeah. You can just jump in the car and go see it when you fancy, really.
Absolutely, yep.
Gosh. What would you say to someone who's never been before? You just say, like, you've got to go.
I would definitely say check it out. I mean, it's a huge tourist area, so you got to think of that, too. But it really is a beautiful space to see and just at least experience once, for sure.
Okay. I'll bear that in mind. Thank you. So, Laura is an author. She's worked on a project called Project Derma. She's also a blogger for The Healthy Place. A little bit more about that later on. And works for a charity called Canadian BRFB as communications manager. So, like I said, I really appreciate you joining us today. I know you've got lots and lots of different things that you want to talk to everyone about. But I know we had a little bit of a chat beforehand. Usually what we talk about is, like, at the start of the podcast, we want to get a little bit of context for you. So we usually ask, like, you know, if you were to write your book, and I know you have, like, what would your chapter one look like about who Laura Barton is? Or, you know, if you're a superhero and this is your first ever comic book, what would your origin story look like?
Yeah, it definitely is interesting coming at it from kind of already having written it. It's not an easy thing to write, surprisingly. But for me, starting at the beginning, I guess, I was around 5 years old, so pretty young. When, for me, I started picking my skin. We don't have, like, an exact sort of age, but that's kind of where we track it back to. And I've just been dealing with it ever since. Lots of highs and lows with the disorder, because really it's not something that many people know about. And so while there's more conversation about it now, back when I was a young child, there really wasn't much knowledge. And from my book, I really actually start with kind of one of my first memories of trying to professionally address the skin picking disorder.
Yeah.
Went into the pediatrician's office, and I distinctly remember him saying, "So why do you pick your skin?" And all ashamed and feeling really bad about it, I said, "Oh, I don't, I really don't," type thing. And it wasn't until much, much later that I would be comfortable with saying, "Yeah, actually, I do pick my skin. It's a thing." And just kind of deal with it from there. So.
Interesting. It's interesting because, like, there's that shame and guilt there about having done it in the first place, because I guess there's that perception of everyone else that it's, like, weird, or, like, you know, why would you do that? Because it's, like, it's almost like, would you argue it's like a form of self-harm?
Actually, I would argue against that.
No, interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. The reason that it's not self-harm, I see it as not self-harm, and even the diagnostics see it as not self-harm, is because the intention behind it isn't to harm yourself. Rather, skin picking and other disorders like it, such as hair pulling or nail biting when done to extreme levels, are a form of, like, a grooming behavior gone awry. Because if you think about it, everyone might pick their skin a little bit to flake a skin, whatever it is, or some might bite their nails occasionally, but with the disorders, it's like taking that to the next level.
Yeah,
and for the people that just do it occasionally, they're not thinking about hurting themselves either, right? So
yeah,
with it as a disorder, my intention isn't, I'm going to sit here and harm myself for whatever reason. It's my brain saying, okay, we need to groom and get rid of this thing that's bothering.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's an interesting point of view that you brought to the table because, I think you're right, to be honest with you. I was kind of playing devil's advocate with what I just said before. Because I know we were talking a little bit beforehand, but I think, and I've never actually spoken about this to anyone before in my life, other than my dad. I've skin picked my whole life. Like, looking at my thumbs now, they're, like, pink and sore from where I've been picking at them. I've got it on my my little fingers as well, a little bit, and on my index fingers. It's weird that it's only on certain fingers most of the time. But, yeah, I've had that my whole life. So that, what I'm trying to say, I guess, is that shame and that, like, guilt, I've always felt that.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the shame and guilt for me was, again, because people didn't understand it, so they associate the behavior with something that's seriously wrong. And I know for me, I had, I would call it, I guess, a lot of negative reinforcement when I was younger, just because they didn't understand it. So it would be something like, oh, that spot you picked, it looks angry, or it's yucky, you should let it heal. And, well, now looking back, I can understand why they would kind of approach it that way. At the time, it was really, really hard to hear and created a lot of the shame.
Yeah, I understand. So what happened after that doctor's visit then?
So after that doctor's visit, he had prescribed like an antibiotic cream to try to heal the sores, but of course when you just keep picking Mopin, it doesn't ultimately do anything.
Yeah.
And just kind of for years and years and years, my mom and I would just try to find ways to cover up the sores, to heal them, and it was never really addressed as a clinical problem again. It was just kind of trying to self-maintain any sort of level of healing or anything like that. But ultimately, that wasn't quite successful considering I just still continued to do it. I just got better at hiding it. So,
And what would you do to hide it?
So, long clothing, kind of try to pick in areas that people wouldn't see. Which is hard when you're a child and, you know, your mom has to help you with stuff. But, yeah, as I got older, it was a lot of wearing long clothing, even in extreme heats. And, you know, even though it sucked to do that, it was easier to deal with, why are you wearing a sweater in the middle of summer, as opposed to, why do you have all these marks on your body? What's wrong with you?
Yeah, it's easier to wear the clothing than it is to explain.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially when you don't really understand it yourself, because it wasn't until I was probably around 19 or so that I really started to get a grasp on what this is and start reading up about it and educate myself about this disorder.
And what did you find when you started looking deeper? And I guess I mean that in two ways. What did you find when you looked within yourself and started asking? Because, like, it's really interesting. I'm literally on the edge of my seat because I know what happened with me, but I don't want to, like, I want you to tell your story first.
Yeah.
So, like, what happened, one, when you looked inside of yourself and started asking these questions, like, where did it come from, that sort of thing. But also, what happened when you started looking externally out in the world as well and, like, you know, looking online, that sort of thing.
For the longest time, when I was introspective about it, I had this idea that, oh, it must have come from something traumatic that happened in my life that I don't remember or whatever the case is. And if I could just uncover what that was, then boom, I'd be cured, right? And I just was never able to find that. And I really was upset with myself for the longest time and even hated myself for not being able to just stop, because that's a big mantra that people throw at you, well, just stop doing it. And, but it's a disorder and they don't understand that. So for a long, long time, introspectively, it was just a bad, bad place to be. But when I started really delving into it, it was kind of a last-ditch effort to save myself, I see it as, because at that time I was really suicidal and was starting to plan and really get into that stage of it.
Okay.
But for whatever reason, I thought, you know what, I'm just gonna look and see what I can find. And one of the first things I found was a book by a woman named Angela Hartland, who is now one of my very close friends. She had written her memoirs about having this disorder. It's called Forever Marked, A Dermatillomania Diary.
And
yeah, and even just having that other story to lean on was a huge game changer, because for the longest time, I thought I was the only one that had this problem, since no one talks about it and no one seemed to know why it was happening. So then from there, it was just kind of a snowball effect of wanting to learn more and do what I can to, at first it was an effort to heal myself and cure myself, but it's ultimately become about learning to live with this disorder and still lead a happy life and not be bothered by it.
Interesting. That woman's story must have spoken to you so much. It kind of lit a spark on the inside by the sounds of things.
Yeah, absolutely. She's an amazing woman. And like I said, she's one of my close friends now. So it's really, I find it really fortunate that I came across her story and that I've been able to have conversations with her and get close to her in that way.
It must be nice for her to watch you sort of blossom as well, as like, you know, you move forwards, because, you know, you've written a book now and, you know, you are an advocate as well for raising awareness on skin picking. So it must have been nice for her to watch that happen.
Yeah, not to put words in her mouth, but she's said before how it's really cool to see kind of from that initial contact to where we both are now and how different it is.
Mm. Yeah, interesting. What's the reaction been from your family as you started to understand more about it? Have they sort of wanted to travel with you on this journey to like figure out, you know, more about? I mean, it sounds like there's, you know, there's stuff that's a lot deeper there as well, because, you know, when you get into the stage of like planning suicide, you know, there's deeper stuff going on there. Do you think, I've got so many questions. I'll let you answer that one first.
Yeah, so my family has been super supportive, which was amazing to see, because one of the fears when you, I guess, come out, for lack of a better term, with these kinds of secrets is that everyone's going to shun you and push you away. But I guess because they already kind of knew it was happening, it was more of an explanation, and they've been able to learn as well. And my one aunt in particular, she's purchased copies of my books to share with her friends and told other people. And so it's been a nice ripple effect of seeing how my story can help others learn about this disorder.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
It's so nice that you've got like the close family as well. They want to support you, you know, they want to buy you books and help other people find out about you. That's amazing.
Yeah, and I have friends as well that have been super supportive, and I know on my personal Facebook I share lots about these different things, and they've also been supportive and share the links or leave comments, so it's really nice to see.
So do you think that after sort of reflecting, you know, on your own like past and your own experiences, do you think that the skin picking came as a result of something else? You know, like you've spoken about, you know, feeling suicidal, you know, you were literally getting to the point where you were planning it out, which I think is where you're pretty close, aren't you, at that point?
Oh yeah.
And you know, so you're at this really sort of tipping point, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that the skin picking is a result of whatever was causing you to feel suicidal?
That's kind of a tough one because skin picking, it's its own standalone disorder, but it can feed off of a lot of different things. So, for instance, as I said earlier, I've also experienced depression and anxiety, and those things were definitely 100% fueling into that suicidal ideation as well.
Yes.
So it was kind of a mix of all of those things at the same time, not really understanding any of them, and definitely not understanding how to cope with them. But in terms of whether the skin picking is a result of those other two things, I don't really think so. For one, the depression came at a later stage in my life. The anxiety's kind of always been there too. But as I said, I think it's more that they feed into each other. And another reason I think that is because there are studies being done that are showing the genetic links for skin picking disorder and other disorders like it. So it's already ingrained in our brains so far as I see it. And it's a matter of something maybe triggering it and flipping that switch to where you're now compulsively picking your skin or pulling your hair or whatever the case is.
Interesting.
Yeah, there are lots of interesting studies being done right now. Most of them are out of the States. And most of them as well are for hair pulling disorder, trichotillomania, but the two are very closely linked. So you can see how it also relates to skin picking disorder. And it's really neat to see the different things that they're discovering and trying to find out. It's a lot of the times just a matter of funding because it's not a big area of interest, so to speak, like depression would be. So
yeah, I can see what you mean, because I guess the perception from the outside, and I don't know if that this is true or not, I guess what the perception might be from the outside is that, you know, skin picking's more cosmetic than, you know, emotionally damaging, like, or, you know, emotionally burdening, like depression and anxiety is.
Absolutely. A lot of people simply see it as an on-the-surface problem without realizing all the negative ramifications that come with it internally and socially and everything like that. So it's a really under-focused area. And I think the other problem is, too, for skin picking in particular, that people see it as a side effect of drug use. So they see it as, well, you just have an addiction problem and you need to focus on that instead.
It's interesting because, like, I don't think about my skin picking too much. Like, I was very much like you in that it started at a really young age. It started at a really, really young age. And I don't know, it was just there. It didn't feel weird. Like, it just, it, like, happened. Sometimes I didn't like that it happened, but, like, I didn't really question it until, like, I got older. And I spoke to my dad, and, you know, he was like, I remember him saying to me, I always know when I'm really bad because I look at the state of my fingers. And then I started doing the same, and I was like, right, so that means that the way I'm feeling about myself is reflected in my, like, fingers and my skin picking. Because it wasn't just my fingers, it started, like, going to, like, other areas of my body, like, you know, like my hands, like my feet, like, yeah, definitely, I understand, like, the hair picking. For me, it was more like my scalp, if that made sense. And it's like, it's weird talking about this out loud because I've literally never really spoken about this, but, like,
no, I totally understand that.
It's like, this is why I was really excited to talk to you about it, because I just thought this is it's fascinating to that someone's actually raising awareness for this. Because I've been not suffering, but I've been silent about it my whole life until now. Because I've always felt ashamed of it, and I felt that, like, no one else had this. It's the same reason I started the podcast, is because, you know, I didn't want anyone else to ever feel like how I felt, as a result of having PTSD and, you know, anxiety issues. And it's just really interesting, because I think my skin picking now is a direct result as to how I'm feeling about myself. And it is also habitual as well. So, like, if I'm bored, or if I'm in an awkward situation, or if I feel uncomfortable, or I'm nervous or anxious, it just, that's when it flares up, I think.
Yeah, I'm really glad you brought that up, actually, because one of the things that's so interesting about these disorders is that it happens when you're bored, or it happens when you're anxious, and people have been trying to, you know, make sense of that. And what I'm seeing that I find very interesting in different studies, and just even thinking about it myself, is that I see these kinds of disorders as almost a stimulus control for us. So when we're bored, we're understimulated, and our body is reacting in this way, unfortunately, to, like, make our minds more active, or whatever the case is. Or say when we're anxious or nervous, it's coming into play to calm us down and help us not be in that frantic state, if that makes sense.
Yeah, 100%. It's interesting you said that, because I can't actually ever sit still without not moving anything. So, like, it's interesting, like, if I really try and sit there and focus and try and not move, it just doesn't really happen. So it's really interesting that you said that. And it's interesting as well, like, I was thinking about it earlier before, you know, calling you, how, like, it's the little things, like when you grab some change off, like, a cashier, like if you're at the supermarket or whatever, and it's like, I hide my fingers as I'm, like, I grab it, like, there's little things that I do, like, where if I'm taking something from someone else, I'll always hold my hand out instead of going to take it, because I don't want to show my fingers.
Right.
It's just really interesting how there's all that sort of stuff that we can not be aware of.
Yeah, for sure. I know before I became more comfortable with the scars on my skin, one of the areas that I seem to just focus on is my arms. And so say, for instance, I needed to go get a shot or get blood work or something, I'd always make sure it's the less scarred up arm that, you know, is getting the work done on it, so that I would avoid those comments. But
yeah. it's really, like, meta, this is. <for me. laughs> I feel like I'm in a therapy session.
I will say right now, then, that I'm not a qualified therapist.
Neither am I yet.
Yeah, but it's nice to have those conversations, even with your peers that have gone through the same thing. Like earlier, you mentioned that I do communications work for the Canadian BFRB support network here in Canada. And one of the things I love that we offer are peer support groups. So it's not a group led by a professional or anything like that. And we make sure that's very clear. It's just literally gathering with peers with the same issues and having a conversation. And for many people, it's the first time they've ever even met someone face to face that can relate to what they're going through. And it's really, really cathartic.
So, like, in those types of groups, is the main aim to share experiences, and then, you know, off the back of those sharing experiences, is there then a, like, real push for, like, preventative measures, or is it more about education? Like, how do you explain the peer-to-peer, like, peer group?
I would first and foremost explain them as a comfortable space where you're even welcome to just come sit and listen if you're not comfortable sharing your story yet. I know a few that I had gone through for the longest while, the one young girl would just come and sit there. And each time we would say, hey, do you want to share this time? She'd say, no, I'm good. I just want to sit. And cool, that's fine. But yeah, it really is about sharing personal experiences, going through the highs and lows of what it's like to have these issues. And if we can share different coping methods or say, hey, I was able to get in and see this therapist, or I learned about this new thing that maybe you guys could try out too. So it's a really interesting and really awesome space to be in. And I loved going to those.
That's amazing. Yeah, it's nice that it's very low pressure, and it's about, like I said, creating that safe space, as opposed to, you know, trying to get people to like fix themselves, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. And I think one of the reasons that our peer support groups are structured that way is because they literally initially started out of the founder's living room. She just invited some people to come over and have a conversation with her, and then from there it's blossomed into something even bigger. So
that's pretty special.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, do you get a lot of members that come to this? You know, do you get a lot of people reach out where they go, you know, okay, I've never spoken about this before, and you know, I'm interested in meeting other people that have suffered with the same disorder?
Yeah, absolutely. We get Facebook messages or emails of people saying, hey, I saw your post about the group, or I heard about the group. Can I know a little bit more about it? I might want to come out and meet some people and share my story, or whatever the case is. So there definitely are people that reach out to us and ask about these things.
Interesting. So a little bit more back to you now and your story.
Okay.
So, you know, you've met this really influential person in your life, and you started to learn more about skin picking disorder as a result mm-hmm. of hearing someone else's experience. You know, what was like the driving change for you to sort of, you know, you're coming back from like a really dark place in your life. You know, mm-hmm. what was like the prime mover for that, like, you know, not going through with the suicide, you know, overcoming that?
Mm-hmm. I think it was just kind of a lot of things happening in my life at that moment. So the one was finally having some sort of information. I'm an academic at heart, so I love learning. And to me, knowledge is power. So that was a really key thing for me, I think. And then just in my personal life as well, some friends were reaching out at that time, and it just kind of, the universe came together in a nice way, I guess. And,
yeah, it all came together at the right time.
Yeah, and I was able with all of that to start moving forward. But interestingly, even at that time, I still never ever intended to talk about this issue or any of my mental health issues, to be honest. It was still going to be that dark secret that I kept with me, and I was just going to maybe know how to cope with it better and hide it better. What really started the ball rolling, which makes me laugh, is that there was actually an article in late 2012 that came out talking about the next edition of the DSM, so the DSM-5, which was published in 2013. And for the first time ever, skin picking disorder was being included in that manual, and which was something I was super excited about. It was like, yeah. Oh my God, finally something, there's something concrete that, yes, this is an actual thing.
People are identifying it and accepting it in the professional space.
Yeah, except with this article, it was kind of complaining and bashing on the disorders that were being added to the DSM for that edition, including skin picking disorder, which the author referred to as a reality show problem, which really, really, really bothered me. And from there, I started writing and haven't stopped.
Gosh.
Yeah, just such a gross misunderstanding of what these disorders are and how they can affect people. And I feel like he just read that it was being added and thought, oh, what is this? Like, this isn't even a thing, without actually doing any homework into it.
Yeah, like talking to anyone who's actually had it or anything like that.
Absolutely.
It's amazing, isn't it? Because, like, I think about empathy a lot, and, like, you know, empathy can be boiled down to, like, you know, getting enough context about someone else's life that you can understand things from their point of view, and even get to the point of accepting, or, you know, like, seeing where they come from, like, why they've landed in that place in the first place. And, like, it's a shame when people don't take the time to, you know, do that. Yeah, that's just, it's unfortunate, but it's also great, because that was what inspired you to start speaking out about it.
Well, yeah, in my case, it was kind of a nice thing that happened, I guess, for lack of a better way of putting it. But I know for a lot of other people, that is so damaging. And as you said, it's really unfortunate that more people can't empathize, or at least try to see that, maybe I don't understand this, but I see that it's affecting you, and I can acknowledge that.
Mm. What would you say to someone who, you know, whilst we're on the topic of empathy, you know, what would you say to someone, like, who's got a partner, or who's got a friend, you know, who's got, like, skin picking, and they want to understand it a little bit more?
Well, I would say start reading up about it. Whether it's going to our website with Canadian BFRB, or whether you go with the TLC Foundation for BFRBs, or the OCD centers, or whatever the case is, find a reputable source to learn about it. And also, I would recommend reading stories of people who have lived with this disorder, because that gives a new insight, because even if you're partner has explained to you before, this might be a new way of seeing it, and you might have that light bulb moment of, oh, I didn't know it was that bad, or I didn't know it could affect you in this way, and it might generate a better conversation between the two of you. Ultimately, I think it's about sitting down with your partner and having that conversation and listening to them and what they need from you, or what they don't need from you even, in terms of dealing with this disorder.
Mm. That's some really good advice. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
So what was the reaction from people? You know, so you started writing about your experiences. I presume that's when you started blogging, or is this writing in the sense of, you know, actually getting to a place where you want to put this together into your first book?
It was kind of a bit of both. At that time, I wasn't with Healthy Place yet, but I was doing a lot of personal blogging, whether it was on a website like Blogspot or Tumblr or whatever the case was. And I was just writing about these things and sharing about them. The one blog that I had the opportunity to do for the organization, To Write Love on Our Arms, was a kind of a game changer for me, because it wasn't just saying it to my little audience anymore, it was saying it to a much larger audience. If you're not familiar with it, To Write Love on Our Arms is a nonprofit out of the U.S. that shares information about and resources for mental health issues. And I ended up sharing about skin picking on there, and there were hundreds of comments left on that blog and on the social media posts saying that they didn't, like, people didn't know it was a thing, or they've been dealing with this too, and it was really interesting to see.
It's interesting. That was going to be my next question. What was the reaction from your writing? So you answered that as well. So people really it resonated with them, even if it was, oh, I didn't actually know this was a thing.
Yeah, and that's typically the reaction, is that they just don't even realize that it's an actual problem, even if they've been dealing it with them themselves.
Yeah. What do you say to the person who's, you know, I guess this is a bit selfish for myself, because, like, you know, I've got it, I think, you know. What do you say to someone who, you know, has found out they're a skin picker or has known for a long time, and, you know, they're listening to this podcast and they're going, actually, that kind of sounds like me. Like, what's the next steps for them? You know, like, practical advice, you know, what can they do? Is there such thing as a cure, or is it about managing this?
I see it as being about managing it. Right now, there is no cure. So for me, the best option is to learn how to live a happy and full life despite it. There are people that still push for the cure, and that's absolutely amazing. If they ever come out with a cure, wonderful. But if they don't, I don't want to be hinging my life and my happiness on waiting for that magical fix, right?
Yeah.
So for me, whenever someone approaches me and asks, well, where do I go from here? I say, well, you know what? Join a support group, even if it's just on Facebook or somewhere else online, because even that is a great place to start, as you'll start talking with other people that go through the same thing, and you'll see their tips and the way that they cope with it, and it's a great space to share and start learning.
Interesting, being around other people that have been through the similar thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you have a disorder that's made you feel alone for probably your entire life, or for the duration that it's been in your life, it's important, I think, to recognize that you are not. And that sense of isolation is one of the worst things to experience. So
I don't know about you, but like, I get sometimes, I feel like, I just feel disgusted with myself. It doesn't occur that often, because, like, I don't really think about it that much, because it's just kind of, like I say, it's weird. It just feels like it's there. And
mm-hmm.
I don't know. I've tried so many times to stop, and it's not worked, that I just kind of gave up, and, like, I just thought it was just me. And it was interesting, before, like, we got in touch with each other, Laura, like, the first thing I'd ever heard about, like, skin picking being a thing was actually on Twitter about, like, a couple of months ago, where this woman, she's actually from England. She goes on a train, you know, she'd travel and commute for work, and she found that she wouldn't skin pick while she was, like, drawing. So what she would do is draw and do sketches on the train, and what she would do is go up to someone on the train and give them that sketch, and then it would be like an opportunity for her to talk about, like, her mental health and also her skin picking.
Yeah, I know exactly who you mean. I haven't had the opportunity to meet Liz Atkin in person.
That's it, Liz. That's it.
Yeah, I haven't had the opportunity to meet her in person, but I've spoken with her online, and I follow her on her social media, and she's a really amazing person, and I love what she does with that, just drawing on the train and then giving it to other people and having that conversation. It's really amazing.
Have you watched her, is it a TEDx talk she did?
Yes, yeah. That was really awesome as well. I definitely recommend that one.
Oh, I'm so glad. I'm so glad you know who I mean. Yeah, so that was actually the first time I ever heard about it, ever, like, as a thing.
Oh, wow.
I just remember, like, watching it and going, yeah, that's me. Like, you just know, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. You just, when you can see it in someone else or read about it in someone else, it's like, oh my God, there's someone else besides me.
Yeah. And I just love that she, you know, is going around, like, it says a lot about someone, I think. And I'm getting really fired up about this now. It says a lot about someone to be able to go up to someone else and say, here, like, you know, the reason I do this is because I skin pick, and this really helps me, you know, to, like, as an outlet so that I don't do that. And it also helps me, you know, speak to strangers about their mental health as well, even if it's through someone else that they know. And I just love that. It takes a lot to go up to someone who you've never met before and talk to them about such deep and meaningful, like, topics. And, you know, to raise awareness like she's done, it's just amazing.
I 100% agree with you on that. I have social anxiety as part of my anxiety, so even the idea of walking up to someone just scares the crap out of me. So I'm always amazed by how she can just be like, yep, here's this drawing. Oh, by the way, here's why I did it.
Mm-hmm. Totally understand. Sorry, you'll probably hear some noise on this. I've just got my neighbours are doing some DIY, so sorry if you hear the odd drilling noise in the background. but it's interesting, isn't it? My anxiety manifests itself in public places often, so like train stations or like bus stops or out shopping. And it's weird, like, I don't get the social anxiety bit, but I get it in the places where people are. it's weird from that point of view.
Yeah, that is a bit strange, but I can see how that would manifest as well, for sure.
Yeah. How long would you say you've had your anxiety for?
Probably also since I was a young child. It was always brushed off as being shy, especially the social anxiety part. It was just, oh, she's shy, she'll get over it type thing. But it never felt like I was going to get over it. And the label of shy just never felt like it quite fit. So when I learned about social anxiety as a thing, I latched onto that as well. I was like, yes, that's it right there. All of that. That is me.
It just really spoke to you.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's really interesting. Someone really close to me, I would say, has been labelled shy all of their life, and they're actually one of the strongest people that I know, because she's actually been suffering with social anxiety her whole life. And she only opened up to me about it like recently, within like the past couple of years. And it's really interesting, that sort of label of like shyness, you know. I'm not even sure there is such a thing as being shy anymore. I think that it's often someone suppressing themselves because of something that they feel or they're going through.
Yeah, shyness is a very strange thing. I would agree that I'm not 100% sure if it's a totally its own thing or not, but if it is, I feel like shyness you can move past much more quickly, whereas anxiety, it affects you entirely, and sometimes you get stuck there. So
did you ever sometimes I would have dreams like when I'd be going through like anxious like phases, like patches, mm-hmm. I would get dreams where I would be running away from something, or I would be like, I don't know, I'd be doing something and I'd just freeze. Or I often had dreams that I was underwater and I'd try swimming to the surface and I'd just stop moving and I'd just sink to the bottom and I wouldn't be able to move.
Oh yeah, I've definitely had dreams because of my anxiety, but mine come through much more literally than yours have. It sounds like yours are more of a metaphorical level, like with the drowning and being stuck at the bottom. Whereas with my dreams, it would literally bring the things I was anxious about to life while I'm sleeping. So it was like having to live through, in a way, what I was afraid of living through.
Interesting. Like revisiting the event.
Yeah, for sure. 'Cause one of the things that I'm bad for that I have to watch is something I refer to it as thought chaos, just because that's the way I've come to terms with it. Is like I get one thought in my head and then it gets stuck in a loop, and then maybe another thought will come in and that one gets stuck in the loop too, and it's just a whole bunch of thoughts bouncing around everywhere and can't seem to reconcile them and bring them to a close and stop them from going through my head.
Interesting. You quite, like, you understand this stuff about yourself quite well. You know, did you ever, like, go to a therapy or anything like that?
Interestingly enough, I haven't. I've thought really about it many, many times, but I haven't actually gone into a therapist's office.
That's interesting, because you know yourself, like, you know, I know that's the name of the podcast, but like, I wasn't trying to like plug myself, self-plug. Like, you've got a good sense of like who you are, like, and it's quite remarkable, to be honest. Like, you got quite a good sense of who you are, and also, you know, what sort of processes and, I don't know, like triggers you've got and all this sort of stuff, you know. It's remarkable because you just got quite a lot of like self awareness, like, you know. Yeah, I'm impressed.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that, especially since sometimes I don't feel like I have a good handle of what's all going on. But I will say that it's taken a long time to get to even any sort of introspective understanding of myself. So.
Do you think the writing's helped you a lot with that?
Absolutely. I used to journal pretty much daily when things were at the worst parts of my life, and that was a way of helping me get the thoughts spinning around in my head, out of my head, and onto a page. And in doing that, I was able to start noticing different patterns or different ways I was thinking, and it helped make sense a little bit of what was going on. So even with the skin picking as well, it really helped, because I was able to start noticing like, oh, I do it when this happens, or I do it at this time of the day. And having that kind of map, I guess, was good for attacking it head on and learning what I need to do in order to deal with it.
Yeah. That's I love that you said journaling, because it's something that I don't do enough of. I've spoken about it before on the podcast. Journaling has helped me understand so much about myself. It's really helped me, you know, get a grasp for when I'm feeling certain things, and even just like with confidence, like, I don't know, you just have a certain sense of knowing when things are going to blow over, because you've like documented it before and you've got like proof of that, whereas before there'd be like a certain sense of like an element of doubt that would come with like what you may have known to be true, but you're just not sure. Whereas like, I don't know what it is, just when you do the journaling, it's just, it becomes less scary, I think.
Yeah, I think in some ways, for me at least, it helps sort my thoughts between the logical, rational thoughts and the thoughts that come with mental illness, and I can kind of put them both side by side and recognize them for what they are, and it becomes easier to deal with them somehow. But journaling is something I definitely recommend to people, even if you don't really like writing. Like, even just try jotting down a few things, and you never know, it might be something that's helpful. And if it's not, that's great, but I think you should at least try it.
Yeah, absolutely. So with regards to your book, so you've, well, as a writer, you write fiction and non-fiction, don't you?
Yes, yeah.
So in the sort of fiction land, what typically do you write? You know, what sort of like themes and genres do you cover off?
In fiction land, I am mostly a fantasy writer. I used to write a lot of horror short stories too, but as I get older, it's mostly fantasy or urban fantasy or those kinds of things. Yeah, it's kind of an escapism thing, I guess.
Like, kind of creates like a different reality.
Yeah, and with being a writer, I just like exploring different worlds and different characters and getting a sense of who they are and what could maybe happen and that kind of thing. So,
I think I've always been like naturally sort of drawn to like creative writing. I still haven't like quite figured out whether it was me just being able to like work things out by creating like realities and environments where those things and situations that I'm currently in play out, and they play out in a different way than I may have wanted or wished for, or whether it's just cathartic because it's literally just pure escapism, like, you know, maybe a little bit more like yourself.
Yeah, it can be a bit of both. Sometimes it's just helpful to have that little bit of escapism, and then other times it is nice to work in kind of real life stuff or real life emotions you're going through into a fictional world, and it, I guess it helps again with that reasoning and working through it on some level.
And then with your nonfiction, you work on projects. So I'm going to try and say this right. Project Dermatillomania.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's always a mouthful of a word to work through, so I totally understand that.
That's why I said Project Derma earlier, because I knew I was going to actually be able to say that.
Yeah, no, that's totally cool. Just, I guess, to explain, the word dermatillomania is kind of the term that people use on a regular basis, I guess, in the community for skin picking disorder. Its diagnostic name is now excoriation skin picking disorder, but at the time when I started doing that project, I still just always called it dermatillomania. And the reason the books are called Project Dermatillomania is literally because that was a kind of a placeholder. I didn't know what to call them at that time. I just was like, yep, yeah, I'm just doing this Project Dermatillomania book thing and want to know if anyone else wants to join in on it.
Yeah.
Because what it is it's an anthology of stories from skin pickers. So my own stories in the first one, along with stories of other people I've spoken with, and then the second one is my story's not in there at all. It's just other people's stories, which is awesome. And it's just a way to share our personal narratives. It started out way back in 2012. I came up with this idea. I wanted to start writing and sharing my own story, but I didn't feel confident enough to go it alone. So I thought, why not ask other people if they want to share their story as well? And it's just grown from there.
Yeah, I understand. It made it less daunting to, you know, it's, if there's like more than one person reaching out with the story, there's like, yeah, it's like we're coming out and telling instead of just me on my own.
Absolutely. And one thing I've held from the beginning with the book series is that you can tell your story any way you'd like. So if you want to write a poem or draw a picture or write it creatively, you're more than welcome to do that. And you can also share it with any level of anonymity that you want. So if you don't want your name on it at all, that's fine. If you want to share your name, your age, and where you're from, that's cool too. But it was really an effort on my part to create this again, safe outlet for people to be able to share their experiences.
Mm. Did you publish or self, like, sorry, did you get it published or were you self-published with that?
These are both self-published.
Amazing.
I didn't think at the time that a regular publisher would pick that up, and it wasn't overly concerned with a regular publisher picking it up. It was more, I wanted to do this for us. So for people like us that also have this issue, so that they know they're not the only ones going through it.
Amazing.
Thank you.
It's like you created a real community around this, and I love that. It's like, yeah, it's just like wrapping your arms around other people that have been through this or are going through this, and, you know, haven't had or heard anyone talk about it yet. I just really like that.
Yeah, for sure. It's kind of funny. I see it more as an extension of the community as opposed to creating the community, because the people in the stories are people that responded to posts that I made in the existing Facebook groups for these disorders. So it was like taking them from that closed space, I guess, to something a bit more public without them having to go at it by themselves or face the world alone, I guess.
Yeah, I understand now. Yeah. It was casting a light on what was already there, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ah, interesting. Gosh. Like, it's just, it's really impressive. And, yeah, it's something that I'm going to have to look into a little bit more. I'm definitely going to take some of the advice that you've, like, given today, you know, because I want to understand, like, more about what's going on for me and, like, you know, my skin picking. Yeah, you know, because I've spoken with Liz, and, you know, now speaking with you, you know, I've known we've spoken a little bit offline as well. Yeah, I just really want to understand this now, and, you know, because I go, like, really deep with, like, my therapy, like, and, you know, I try and understand as many different parts of myself as possible, and if this is, like, another little piece of the puzzle, this is, you know, it fascinates me.
Yeah, for sure.
So what I've started doing as well on the podcast is, you know, towards the end of the show, I usually ask the guest, you know, what's something about yourself that's unexpected, you know, that people might not know about yourself, something fun and quirky about yourself that people aren't probably aware of?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I don't know. I think of myself as a pretty boring person, so I don't know that there's anything fun and quirky that people don't know.
That's definitely not true. That means there is something fun and quirky there.
Yeah, I really don't know what it would be.
What's your current Netflix obsession then?
I guess this would be quirky then. My current Netflix obsession is watching like foreign romance dramas. So the current show I'm watching is I forget where it's based out of, but it's a Mandarin show, so obviously I'm just reading subtitles, but it's awesome, and it's a really fun show.
is it kind of like soap opera almost?
No.
Okay.
I am not a fan of soap operas at all. I would say it's more of a romantic comedy, I guess.
It's
got fun sides to it, so.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for sharing. what was it called again?
It is called When I See You Again, I believe.
Okay. Yeah. That was good. See, you do have something fun and quirky that people don't know.
Yeah, I guess so.
Well, I want people to be able to find you online. So, you know, chuck some, like, handles at us. So what's your Twitter handle? You know, what's your Instagram? If you've got Instagram, you know, where can people find you?
Yeah, so my Twitter handle and my Instagram handle, incidentally, are Laura_Barton. And if you come across, by accident, Laura Barton, who's a journalist in the UK, that's not me. Because I've had lots of that happen, so that's always fun. But usually on my my social media, if you look at the profile itself, it'll say Laura A. Barton or Laura A. Barton Writer or something like that.
So. Okay. Yeah, I was just making sure that I'm following you on Instagram, and I am. I knew I had you on Twitter. I was like, do I have you on Instagram? And
yeah.
So you're also a blogger for The Healthy Place. I can see that their handle is at Healthy Place.
Yep.
So you'll be able to see blogs written by Laura there.
Yep. I am a blogger with their Surviving Mental Health Stigma section. So obviously I just share about the different stigma with mental illness and how we can approach it and different tips that I've used to get through these situations where I'm faced with stigma. And ultimately my goal is to build people up because I don't know that stigma is ever going to go away. So we might as well work on ourselves in being able to handle it better to the point where it hopefully doesn't bother us anymore.
Yeah. It's like with the skin picking, like manage it as opposed to trying to cure. It's like about, you know, what's the easiest way of living with what's going on?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think in doing that, you also become more comfortable with yourself. So, for instance, with the skin picking, I am to a point in my life where I am not bothered by people seeing my scars or anything like that. So,
this is what I mean about you. You fascinate me because, you know, you've come to, like, these quite, like, sort of wise, like, realizations about what's going on for you. And you know, to a lot of people never reach that stage of you know, understanding that kind of mindset of, you know, you can't always cure these different things. I actually had a therapist tell me, like, you know, it was about a year into therapy that I paid for myself out of my own pocket, that she said to me, you know, you've been suffering and, you know, you've got post-traumatic stress disorder. And I was like, yeah, I just really want, you know, I just really want to cure this and, like, get it over with, get rid of it. You know, I'm just desperate. And she was like, well, you know, there is no cure. You're most likely going to have this for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember how devastating that was to hear. At the time, because I was like, it just completely broke the sort of paradigm that I'd built up in my head of how the therapy was going to play out.
Oh, absolutely. And I can completely understand that. I mean, hearing that something you're suffering with is going to last forever really sucks. And as you say, it's devastating. I know when I first thought of that whole concept of, wow, this might never go away, I was very, very, very upset about that. And it's just been a through processing that, well, maybe it doesn't have to be devastating. Because I think we associate mental illness of any sort with being in a state of suffering and sickness forever. But you can have these problems and still be, I guess, mentally well to some extent. Like, it doesn't have to take over your life and completely consume you.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, you can go, like, day to day and, like, you know, find coping mechanisms that are healthy. I think that's the problem I had. A lot of my sort of defense mechanisms and coping mechanisms were unhealthy. And that was actually stopping me doing the things that I wanted to do. Like, you know, like, I didn't take care of myself. Like, you know, I wouldn't, like, do my washing regularly. Like, I just, there's a lack of, like, self-respect and self-worth that was there. And I'd kind of constructed mechanisms around me that had, like, supported that behavior as well.
It's just about learning, like you say, to have better, healthier coping mechanisms and learn that it doesn't have to be all or nothing. So.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't have to be an interesting thing that I learned, and it was actually outside of therapy, was, you know, I just realized one day, I think it was actually just reflecting. I wasn't particularly journaling, so to say, because, like, I don't know about you, but, like, if I'm, like, washing up or driving the car or something, like, I just go, like, into these crazy rabbit holes in my head where I end up, like, figuring stuff out about myself.
Totally understand that. I am the same way.
I'm glad it's not just me.
Nope, definitely not.
It's just really weird. Like, I should probably be concentrating on the road, but, like...
Yeah, probably.
I just, you can't help it. Your mind just, like, slips into, like, I don't know. I just go totally... It only happens, like, once in a blue moon. I just go really zen, I think, and, like, slip into these, like, ultra-reflective states. Like, washing up always gets me, like, always. If I'm washing up, you can guarantee I'm there, like, thinking about the universe or something.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think it's because we get into the muscle memory of having to do what we have to do, so we don't need to think about actually doing the thing. We just do the thing, and our mind goes somewhere else.
100%. And... I remember thinking that just because I have something doesn't mean I am something.
Absolutely.
Like, I don't know, it's like owning a pair of shoes. Like, just because you own those shoes, like, doesn't mean, like, those shoes, like, make up who you are. Like, it's the rest of the outfit. Like, it's the jacket, it's the shirt, it's the jeans, like... It's everything that makes, like, up, you know, like, your hair, your glasses, like, whatever.
100%, yeah.
And that was a big thing, realizing that it's just a little bit, it's still a little bit of who you are, you know. Mm-hmm. So it is part of you, but it's not, it doesn't define you and mean that you are not who you are.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not your entire personality. And even in moments where you're stuck in that thought, where it's all of who you are, it's just about getting to that moment where you realize again, oh, this is not who I am. This was just a really bad moment, and now I'm going to deal with it.
Exactly. I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. From a personal point of view, it's meant a lot. You know, it's like about skin picking. You know, it's been interesting for me to talk about this for the first time. But more importantly, it's been nice to hear your story. It's been incredible to hear, you know, how hearing about someone else's story and also hearing about, you know, some of the negligence of other people inspired you to, you know, want to write about your own experiences and encourage others to do so about theirs. Yeah, it's inspiring.
Well, thank you. It's been really awesome having this opportunity to talk about it and to chat with you.
Yeah. I was, you know, this is another, like, pocket of information. Like, it's another area where people are gonna, you know, find out about a new, you know, something new that they might not have heard about before. And yeah, I just really appreciate it.
Yeah, for sure. And it's really just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, there's so much more that we could talk about with these disorders. We could probably go on all day, but but yeah. The resources out there where people can definitely find out more if they're interested, or they can reach out to me even. I'm totally cool with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and, you know, Laura, I know you don't like to call yourself an expert, but you definitely know a lot. And I know I've, you know, got a lot from today and also from our conversations beforehand as well. So yeah, definitely hit Laura up or, you know, check out some of the resources that you post on your Twitter page. I've seen a lot of them. I've actually bookmarked a few to look at later on, but
yeah. Awesome.
So yeah, that's the episode for today, guys. This has been Know Yourself with Dan Udell and Laura Barton. Until next time, guys, peace out.